Okay, so this meeting is has been called to look at and share experiences of responses to policies of austerity and cuts, and looking in particular at different local groups campaigning and just talking about how that process works, how effective it is, just to talk about our experiences of that. So there's various people within this room that are involved in different local campaigns and national campaigns, and I'm going to ask a few of them to say something, but if anyone else just wants to chip in and say something about their experiences of being involved in local groups, do come in. We're just starting. It's cuts, yes. This is the only meeting that's happening. I think that one may just be overrunning slightly.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask Kevin if you can start talking about the local group that you've been involved with and your experiences of it.
Okay. It's amazing how much you want to say, but I'm going to keep it down to 10 minutes. For those who don't know South Yorkshire particularly, there's an old place which used to be a steel town called Stocksbridge, which is between Sheffield and Barnsley. 40 years ago, it was entirely based around the steelworks. That's why it was there. 150 years ago, it used to make wire for umbrellas, then moved on to different things. 40 years ago, 1970s, there were quite big struggles around the steelworks. As far as I can make out, there wasn't a great deal of activity around the miners' strike, although there would have been some support there. And what we've seen over the last 5 months is the biggest participation in any campaign in the town for the last 40 years. And that's the starting point, and that's very much the plus that needs holding on to, because there are people who've been through that, who've never been involved in any form of resistance in the past, and haven't ever felt the need to organise for themselves and to take initiatives in a political way for themselves. In the course of the last 5 months, people have learned lessons about self-organising. They've also learned more obvious lessons about the fact that councillors lie, cheat, distort, twist, and cannot be trusted. And to actually learn that for yourself rather than having somebody tell you is again an enormous plus and something that won't go away. The reason the campaign started was that in January it was made public that the council intended to cut £400,000, which was the subsidy to the local leisure centre, and that would just simply make it shut. There's no way it would run without that. Again, going back 40 years, it was actually the grandparents of the people who live in Old Stocksbridge who had actually helped raise the money to build a swimming pool and a sports centre by public subscription. And there's a great feeling amongst people in the town that for the city council, for this, and it's seen as very much as an alien body, for them to cut it for reasons which people can't make out, and for the council to choose to cut it rather than other facilities, is seen as being a real insult to people's heritage and to what they and their families actually made the efforts to build. So that on when it was first announced on the Saturday following, there was about 700 to 800 people gathered in thick snow, freezing cold, Saturday morning, outside the sports centre. Something that, as I say, never happened while I've lived in the town for the last 25 years, and I think it's bigger than anything that's happened for 40 years. And that was the starting point for a campaign. And the campaign, things move incredibly quickly. There's been three phases to the campaign, really. One was to try and force the council to make a commitment to permanently keep it open. And I'll go back to how these three phases move on. Then a campaign to actually stop immediate closure, which succeeded and actually delayed the closure by a month and a bit. And now there's a different type of campaign going on with it. We need to try and understand the different things people have to do. This final phase, which feels less active, it feels less vibrant, but somehow still reflects what people want to do, is to try and keep the facility, to reopen the facility under community ownership. How have we organised? Coming from after that meeting of 700 or 800 people outside the sports centre in Stocksbridge, we're blessed with an extra tier of state organisation, as well as having the city council, which everyone in Sheffield has. We also have a thing called the town council, which is elected in the same democratic charade as we're used to for the city, and which also raises money off people and which runs certain things. Now, the party politics get messy, and I don't want to dwell on them, but basically the city council is controlled by Labour, whereas the local town council has all sorts of strange people on it, as well as strange Labour. So the town council actually got hold of the fact that people weren't at all happy that the leisure centre was being stolen from them, and that they called a public meeting which more than 400 people turned up to. Out of that, the town council tried to organise what they called a working group, which would have somehow acted as the town council's wing in their bargaining with the city council. But the people who turned up to the next two meetings actually didn't want to play that game. What they instead chose to do was to create their own organisation, give themselves a constitution, give themselves a very open membership organisation, which said that anyone can join this who wants to defend sport and leisure in the valley and wants to keep the centre open as a vibrant centre. So that's the only criteria for membership. We also agreed to set it up so that although we have a committee, the role of the committee isn't to control the campaign. The role of the committee is to help things run between the open meetings. The open meetings run the thing, and it's actually set down in the constitution that if there's any doubt between a committee decision and an open meeting decision, that the open meeting prevails. Now that's something which has had to be defended quite a lot over the last few months. We have had lots of open activities and stunty type things, and again there's been a variety. Although they've been launched independently, the various politicians have piggybacked on them. Easy for the Lib Dems to piggyback on, and also UKIP have piggybacked on in a big way, because they can both hold their hands up and say we're totally opposed to these nasty Labour cuts. We've also been following, because the campaign really is by any means necessary, and this doesn't feel something you particularly want to end up doing, but by any means necessary. Me and the people said, well, there's legal things that can be done. So an injunction was applied for a judicial review, and if people want that explained, and can do. But these are legal devices to play for time, to try and keep the place open, while some sort of community-owned alternative can be reached. The injunction fell over a week and a half ago, so the council then used that as their reason to actually shut the doors last Friday. In theory, the doors are shut until a community-owned solution can reopen them. Last Monday, when the injunction fell over, there was a picnic in the park outside the place, and people were very angry, and there was definitely a dozen or two dozen people there who felt that it made sense to occupy the place on the day the doors were shut in. Now, I don't want to spoil a good story, because according to the press and according to social media, an occupation happened last Friday night. So I'm not going to destroy that story. But I will say, unfortunately, by the Friday, and it was an interesting process to live through, the dozens of people who on the Monday were definitely up for it, by Friday it had dissipated, and there were interesting cross currents going on when I was getting I'm the vice chair of the campaign, and 6 o'clock that evening I was getting phone calls from the chair of the campaign saying this really shouldn't go ahead, we really shouldn't be doing this, the council's being won over, and we're going to make sort of gains here, and occupation not a good thing. Anyway, by osmosis, and also, and I think this is the big difficulty for revolutionaries in this sort of process, the fact is that people weren't confident enough to say that collectively we can occupy this building, even if only for a short time. We can at least do a good sized stunt. It mightn't stop the process, but it will galvanise things. That was something that was lost, and given I've only got 10 minutes, perhaps that's where I want to end up, of saying that for me, as a revolutionary, clearly, when a working class community is having the guts kicked out of it, because it's the sports centre this year, post-16 education's already gone in the town, the advice centre stumbles from funding crisis to funding crisis, library we're almost certain is on the hit list for next year. So when a working class town is having the guts kicked out of it, then as a revolutionary, I don't think I can stand aside from that. But the experience, certainly, that I've lived through is that isolated campaigns are going to be, and I use the word, I think a fair number of people in the room have come across the word, recuperation, that the state, that the class forces that control the state are able to absorb the energies that we've put in independently, and they're able to divert things into safe channels, and sooner or later the community enterprise as an alternative is that safe challenge. But it's also a safe challenge where the community itself has to put in enormous amounts of work to try and replicate what any capitalist enterprise would do. Okay, so shame to end on a negative. The positive is, because of the involvement, because of the self-organisation, people do want to do other things as well. I think if there's a library campaign last year, that the people will have learned lessons and will move on, and at the very least they want to organise the type of carnivals, the type of festivals, the type of participatory things that they haven't had for 30 or 40 years.
Sorry, my name's Jane. I'm from Harrogate, which is in North London. I don't know, Becky's hard to speak, but it's quite a different kind of campaign. I don't know if anyone knows that the benefit cap is being introduced to 4 London boroughs and was introduced into Harrogate, one of the 4, in mid-April. So I was just going to say a few bits about that. I don't know how relevant it is for up here in Sheffield. It came on the back of like a borough-wide alliance for public services, which kind of kicked off, I guess, in sort of 2009, when there were probably lots of other anti-cuts groups around the country started going. But once we found out, sort of last summer, that the benefit cap was going to come in around the country, we knew that Haringey would be affected. So it's like a £500 cap for households, for couples or people with children, which £5 per week cap on benefits, which might sound like a lot when you live up here, but if you're in London and you rent privately or in temporary accommodation and you have three or more children, you're basically going to be affected because your housing benefit, your rent, will take you over the £500 a week limit. So we've got people in the borough. So basically I'm involved in a housing action group and also Haringey Solidarity Group. And through both of those groups, we've been organising around the benefit cap. We've got families who are involved in the housing action group who stand to lose, say, £220 a week. And they have been called into the council to have discussions with the council about how they intend to make up that difference, which obviously is just a complete impossibility if you're claiming benefits. So I don't know what would be useful for people to know. We've been organising basically around leafleting outside schools and outside the council offices where people go for housing advice, try and bring people together to try to create some kind of opposition and resistance. It's very, very early days. So actually the rollout's been much slower than expected, and the DWP and the council have been quite slow in actually making calculations of people's benefits that they stand to lose. So very few people have actually had their calculations through yet. But obviously once it kicks in, then people are likely to fall behind on their rent, and eventually it will lead to evictions. And we're expecting, well, there's 1,000 families that are due to be affected in Haringey, and a lot of them are quite worried about being pushed up to places like, maybe, I mean, in fact, there is one family that we know of has moved to Sheffield, but others have been encouraged to move to Birmingham or Bradford. And we're talking about families who quite often originally came to this country as refugees. They've been maybe living in Haringey for the last 10, 12, 13 years in a lot of cases. It's taken a long time to establish themselves in the local area, build up, you know, community networks and have families in the area, and now they're going to be moved out. And we just had a demonstration actually on Thursday outside a local housing association, Genesis, who sent letters to 57 families in the borough threatening eviction, and they're already starting court proceedings against those families, even though none of them had their benefit calculations through yet. So I don't know what else to say, really. We've got various targets against the government, like I said, against housing associations. We're trying to put pressure on landlords and letting agents to, however unrealistically, reduce their rents. And we're trying to, I guess, counteract the kind of general strivers kind of rhetoric through just propaganda, flyposting, whatever, around the borough. But mainly, I think we're going to be organising around kind of developing like an eviction pack to give to people to maybe organise in estates or in small areas around Haringey and wider afield as well, like what you should expect if you're threatened with eviction, and maybe what you can do to either stop it or at least publicise it, which will hopefully send out a message to other landlords not to do the same thing. But in many ways what we're doing kind of mirrors what I think some of the bedroom tax campaigns have been doing around the borough, around the country. So really looking at how to protect people from evictions and publicise when people are under threat. I don't know. Anyway, everyone's got questions later on, maybe.
Do you want to say anything about the library campaign?
Yeah, I can say a quick. My name's Dan. I'm a library worker. I work at the Central Reference Library. So just a quick bit about how things stand at the moment in libraries. I think the important thing to understand with cuts to libraries is while they're biting quite hard at the moment, this is part of an ongoing process which has been going on for years and years and years. I was until recently a Unison steward, so there's that kind of atmosphere in libraries that affects the ability to sort of organise workers in that situation. With regard to Sheffield, we're currently in a situation where we're doing better than a lot of other places in the country, in that we haven't had any libraries closed yet, we haven't had volunteers brought in to run our libraries yet, but we're currently in the stages of having a consultation. They've gone through one phase of the consultation. They've produced a brochure outlining sort of what all our libraries are, what they do, and asks for various different community groups, much the same as they have done with leisure centres and things like that. And that's at the point now where they're looking and trying to decide on a model that will sustainably take libraries forward, you know, that kind of language, for Sheffield for the future. In terms of the way protests and stuff have gone against that, I haven't been as involved in it for the last sort of 6 months to a year or so. Like I say, I'm a Unison steward, so I've been working with the union to try and to organise workers around this issue, and it's difficult because there's a great degree of there is nothing we can do to stop this thing, which I'm sure is common in all workplaces at the moment. But it's been this drip of cuts over the last, you know, 10, however many years, and now being compounded by these sudden, quick and deep cuts. So going back further perhaps than a year, there was various protests were organised. We worked with other groups such as UK Uncut. We occupied a bank and turned it into a library for a day. We got lots of people into a library and got a mass shushing. Get the stereotype, but you know, it kind of caught the attention of the press. And other more stunty kind of stuff like that. There have been various petitions that get off the ground. Trying to think what else. There have been other bits of protest like that, and trying to link up with other campaigns. I'd like to think that some of that stuff has had an effect in Sheffield, and that's the reason why we haven't. It's taken that much longer, but I don't know if that's just the incompetence of our council, maybe. But I'd like to think it's some of that pressure we've been putting on with these big, high-profile things. We had another thing where we asked, we tried to get Ian McMillan to come, and he's been very vocal about his opposition to what's going on in libraries, to come and do an event in a library, and we asked permission for this, and the question went all the way up the council, past the head of libraries, up past the head of libraries, up to wherever that goes. They came back down, no, you can't do that. So we wrote to the Star and told them about it. Front page, Ian McMillan banned from Sheffield Libraries. Ian McMillan wasn't very happy because we hadn't totally told him that's what he did, but it was all right in the end. So as for where we are at the moment, we've got all this stuff, and this is, I think, is probably quite a crucial time now, because it feels like this is when they're really going to start looking at the idea of either closing libraries, and if they're not closing libraries, they're looking towards social enterprises, community and volunteer groups coming in, and, you know, I'm sure you're all aware of the issues with that kind of thing happening. You can't run a library on that basis. But hopefully we can stop it.
Christine, do you want to say something?
I'll have a go. I've been involved in a number of campaigns, so I've said today I'll say something about UK Uncut. I've mostly been involved in Uncut actions in Sheffield as a musician. I've written some things down because I'm not statistically brilliant, so I'm just going to read a few things to you. This is some words from David Kirkham, who is one of the main people who's organised Uncut actions in Sheffield. And he said, on October 26, 2010, UK Uncut was just a hashtag. On October 27, 2010, it became one of the most talked about pressure campaigns in history. Sometimes gets a bit carried away. Just 1 week after George Osborne announced the deepest public service cuts since the 1920s, 17 people ran down Oxford Street, London, entered Vodafone's flagship store and sat down. UK Uncut had shut down Vodafone's flagship store. Shortly afterwards, people in Sheffield entered branches of Lloyds Bank, Dorothy Perkins, Boots, Topshop, Burton's, HSBC and other tax-avoiding companies to protest against their bonus culture, fraudulent practice, money laundering and tax dodging. We're still hammering home our message in our city today. So basically, UK Uncut, as you probably know, is creative civil disobedience against tax-avoiding companies with the simple message that if there was a fairer system of taxation, you know, this whole financial crisis that's been used as the reason for shutting down public services, libraries, hospitals, decent housing, benefit, you know, basic human need is being sacrificed to millionaire tax cuts. And UK Uncut's approach to that is to creatively do things like take over libraries or banks or make crashes in Vodafone or there was an action to, well, actually, it was an interesting action to set up Starbucks as a refuge, which didn't actually happen because there were too many issues around that that hadn't been thought through. But basically, it's going out in public, creatively expressing the simple message that austerity is not inevitable. You know, it's not as if there's a drought and so there isn't any water. There's plenty of water, we're just not sharing it. Basically that's what the movement's about. I've found it very inspiring to be in, because it just feels really important that when all this stuff is happening, which is awful, to meet collectively and just say the blatantly obvious together. And, you know, remind ourselves that this kind of inhumanity in terms of cutting necessary human services isn't inevitable and there is an alternative to it. And I, even though doing that in itself and doing a quirky, creative, wonderful thing in the street and making people smile and getting general public to come up and sign the petition, obviously that's not job done. And, you know, all the struggles around how to feed that in to something that has more effect. I don't have any easy answers to that. But it feels to me just tremendously important to protest and express in a whole variety of ways that it isn't inevitable, it isn't acceptable. We have noticed, we are aware and undeceived about what's actually going on and, you know, what cards we're being played here. And drawing people into that. I've found doing it on the streets of Sheffield, massively positive response. I mean, occasionally some people go by in a little group, but generally massively positive response. It feels like it's a relief to be able to create some kind of, you know, sane, creative humanity. Which is not, you know, it's not on the advertising hoardings, is it? It's not on the news. And we need to keep saying it to each other. And, I think for me it works on two levels. On a personal level, you feel better, you know, you feel less hopeless and you feel not alone. It's mentally inspiring and it's kind of grist to the mill for how we carry on and try and make that vision actually, you know, try and replace the shite that is currently operating with something sustainable and humane. The other thing I wanted to mention was one of the most probably heard about things was during the big anti-cuts demo in London, the March for the Alternative organised by TUC, Uncut went and occupied Fortnum and Mason. You probably know, and there was various controversy in the press about whether that was peaceful or not, and some misreporting that it wasn't, and actually it was a completely peaceful process. It was, you know, quite playful. I remember I wasn't in Fortnum & Mason, I was in the march. I remember seeing people hanging out windows, you know, having cups of tea, and it kind of looked like we'd occupied the palace, and I like the style of that. And also that it completely coexisted with the union march. You know, there was no conflict between marching with the unions or doing civil disobedience. It was all, you know, it was all in the same stream of things. And I think diversity of expression is all to the good.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll open it up if anyone would like to comment on any of those examples of different responses to austerity.
Right,
please do.
I know quite a few people here, so it's great to see some other people that I don't know, and I'm going to do some decor making. That's where I'm going to leave in a moment, so it'd be really nice to meet you up at the decor making, because I haven't had the chance to say hello to everyone. But I've been involved with lots of different things in Sheffield, known to quite a few people, specifically Occupy Sheffield, and there's other people in the room that might want to say their bit, because we're all completely diverse who got involved with Occupy Sheffield. But really, yeah, I'm interested in moving it forward. All the things Christine said about creativity, like I say, that's happening now upstairs, so I'm going to go and do that. And for me, on a personal level, it's about being creative, having fun, being the change you want to see by getting on together and just doing it and living it. And then we can never lose if we're doing that in our daily life, in every moment that we're living. So it's all good. And yeah, I could talk a lot about the camp, but maybe someone else might want to do that, and how we can move forward. So
thank you. Okay, so people don't have to only talk about the things that they've personally done. You know, if you want to comment on other things, or talk about, you know, strategy, or how we avoid the recuperation, or how we avoid that kind of the fatalism that people have talked about, then just
can I?
So yeah, one and then two.
Yes.
Okay. I was involved in Occupy Sheffield, and then we were evicted from the cathedral, and we then were spotting the Citadel, and we were evicted from there. And the group, which was a very solid group, really split up, and it was it was very difficult for the group to continue after that. But the people who were involved in Occupy Sheffield are now involved in lots of things. And still, Occupy Sheffield is going on. And I've been involved in UK Uncut, and now Bedroom Tax. There are all over Sheffield, there are different campaigns against the bedroom tax, and people are doing different things. What I'm interested in is your last question: how do we increase the effectiveness of responses to the state's austerity programme? And I think the People's Assemblies, which Owen Jones is, and Tony Benn is speaking next Saturday in Nottingham, and in Manchester the Wednesday after, and I think Owen Jones is coming to Sheffield that same Wednesday. And I think that's quite hopeful, because what they're trying to do, and I've been talking to people here today who aren't that hopeful about it, but what they're wanting to do is to give a kind of credible, viable alternative to the neoliberal austerity programme that people can hear. And the problem is that if you're an occupier, or if you're in Uncut, I mean, I know all these things and all these things together have an effect, and a good effect, and they're good for people's morale, and they're good to inform people, but we really need something that can stop this government doing what it's doing to people. And I think there's some hope in those People's Assemblies. So how do we increase the effectiveness? There are some ways. There's the Centre for Welfare Reform, somebody called Simon Duffy, who's working on, in Sheffield, working on changing the propaganda we've got against people like skivers and scroungers, and against older people, against people with disability, about how you change that round, about how you can change that propaganda. And I don't know how you do that, but we're going to work on that. So I think there are ways to increase the effectiveness, as well as doing all these non-violent direct actions.
Thank you.
It's an observation, really, I suppose. Since the divide into various currents, I think since some people are involved in X campaign, whatever that campaign may be, and their real interest is to see some sort of victory in that area, we're not really looking beyond that. There are possibly other people, I'm thinking possibly of the UK Uncut, who were opposed to cuts in general. Then possibly leading on to what you're saying, you know, what is the alternative? I think you said something like, there is an alternative. You said something like that, but I think that is a question. What is the alternative? Yeah, and I think then again it's going to divide again, isn't it? Because we're going to get one group of people and they say that the alternative is basically this society without the cuts, and then you're going to get people like myself and hopefully like Kevin, I think, who are going to say this society is the root of the cuts, is the root of the malaise, and that within this society all you're going to get is something worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. Yeah, it's almost like if you put your finger in one leak, the leak's going to come somewhere else. You're going to be standing there with all your fingers and your toes in all the leaks, and it's still going to be flooding at you. Yeah, because essentially, you know, it's a relatively it's a complex analysis. It's a simple analysis. That's all that capitalism's got. Yeah. Capitalism can only offer us working people worse and worse and worse and worse. So at some point in time, you have to understand that all you're dealing with simply the effects of a single problem, which is the crisis of capitalism, and that there is no solution within capitalism. That's my observation.
Yeah, my name's Ollie. I've not really been involved in anything in Sheffield over the last couple of years that's been like specifically anti-cuts, apart from maybe Occupy for a bit, which was an interesting experience. Anyway, wasn't what I was going to talk about. But I think one really key thing that strikes me and feels like a useful point to me as well, if I think, okay, how do I actually want to be involved in anti-cuts resistance and in the future, then it's kind of related to that point that you were saying, Christine, about like the thing that was manifested in a Unison march going on at the same time as people going into Occupy a shop. And I think that that principle of like different groups, maybe with different, well, definitely with different tactics, and maybe even with different aspirations in terms of, you know, what they see as the solution or whatever. Different groups being able to work together and support each other, or at least not kind of criticize each other, is a really crucial thing. And there is, I think, it needs to lead further than just what you're talking about, like, you know, what you might call peaceful civil disobedience. Stuff like that. It needs to go definitely further than that, and not being around myself, balaclaved up and kind of smashed up shops or anything like that, but you know, I think that proper resistance and proper kind of effective, if we're talking about what's going to be effective, then yeah, I think that's only going to come when tactics used, kind of the range of tactics used, can expand much more widely than is kind of the current accepted set of tactics. I'm just reiterating the point, but I don't know how useful that is, even on a personal level, in terms of me thinking like, okay, well, so what am I actually going to do? I think acceptance of why diversity of tactics is a really key thing.
Thank you. One and then two.
I wanted to, I think, draw out something that has kind of been like slightly touched upon, and to build on what the man in red said, Stephen, which is kind of this thing about kind of fighting to maintain and protect the services that we do have, while simultaneously acknowledging that actually they're not always good enough. Like, what, you know, it's really important to fight and protect what we have in terms of like welfare state and education and health service, but actually a lot of those things are quite controlling and disciplining. And that I think that it's really, really difficult, but I think that there's an interesting potential that opens up once we start kind of actually questioning, so what, once you're fighting for something, I think it's also a useful moment to reflect what are we fighting for, and this kind of idea of moving everything into community ownership, or, you know, bringing in sort of volunteers and community, there's kind of without wanting to be kind of sort of complicit in that sort of awful big society, that using that as a kind of Victorian opportunity for middle class people to exercise control, which is the risk, there is obviously, there is kind of, are there possibly alternatives to do sort of more interesting, more resistant, more kind of working kind of, the group that I'm part of has kind of talked about in and against the state, so kind of working, you know, having a state that funds services, but actually being able to do more interesting things with those services, and in kind of getting into community ownership, community organisation, get, you know, this kind of move that people have to start fighting for and getting involved in their services, instead of it being sort of a, you know, a thing that the state kind of benevolently steps in and does. You know, I'd like to think that there's actually kind of a space there for something more interesting to happen.
Okay, my name's Ronan. One of the things I'd like to come back on really is I think we really need to focus on things that we agree on. There's a lot of different organisations, a lot of different campaigns, and I think probably we agree on about 90% of what the way to go forward. And yes, there are differences, but if we focus on what we can agree on, we can actually make more progress. So there's a lot of you campaigns, and the Stocksbridge Leisure Centre, the libraries. I mean, libraries had a strike some time ago, which we won. Obviously, that's perhaps one of the reasons why Sheffield's keeping them so far. So I think bringing the resistance together under sort of an anti-capitalist flag, because I don't think capitalism is really going to work. I don't think I agree with taking more and more services under a cooperative sort of civil society type way. I've been involved in running a community supported agriculture project that's growing through local organic in Hazelhurst near Norton, and it is incredibly hard work. It requires a lot of investment of time and energy. And we're producing this food, but a lot of the people who are doing it are volunteers. We haven't managed to employ two people, but it's physically possible to run necessary services on a volunteering basis. I don't think that's the way forward. I think the People's Assembly with Owen Jones and Mark Steele on Wednesday, 22nd of May, is going to be another opportunity us to get together and work towards finding a way forward so we can sort of bring down this vicious Tory government and also work together to build services that we all need.
Thank you. Can I just say again that if people can't make the Wednesday in Manchester, then the Saturday in Nottingham, the people's.
It's not happening in Sheffield then, no?
Owen Jones is coming on Wednesday, lunchtime, to the Students' Union.
Right, but then going on to Manchester.
Yeah.
Right, okay, thank you.
I'm probably going to be almost inadvertently reiterating a lot of points that have just recently been made. I haven't been active in campaigns in Sheffield because I'm a recent transplant, but I have been involved in campaigns in York, where I used to live. And it really is worth, I mean, we don't want to dwell on the negative, but I think it's such a vitally important strategic point is just to recognise how destructive the rhetoric has been, and the ability to turn the language of collectivisation against us has been just an immensely awful experience for those people who have been working to fight the closure of social provisions, whether they're libraries or leisure centres, who have themselves perhaps been invested emotionally in an idea of collectivisation, to then have frequently Labour-controlled town or city councils or county councils say, well, actually, wow, isn't this what you've always wanted? This is your great chance. You know, we're going to
shut this fucking thing, and now you can run it. And you're left saying, well, wait a minute, well, we can't do that, you can't do that. And they turn around and say, I mean, not officially, but they turn around and say, ha, that's your problem, bro. You know, you want to do this, then that's nothing to do with us. And that has been an immensely destructive and negative thing, because people are then faced with the situation when the actual organisation splits in two, and people who want to oppose it 100% the closure, and those people who still believe in the notion of collectivisation are then set against themselves, and that really, there's very little way out of that apart from going further up the strategic ladder and thinking, as the woman in red across from me pointed out, that you actually need to think about this on a much deeper meta level. Like, you really need to think, well, we need a concerted strategy as to whether or not we are for state provision or we're against it. And probably at an anarchist book fair, none of us would be here if that wasn't a kind of central guiding question of our own personal ideologies.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be reiterating, so I'm kind of agreeing with what's just been said there, and this, my own sort of personal thoughts is that I agree totally that there is, in a sense, there is a room for some kind of opportunity maybe at this juncture with this talk of communities and that kind of thing. But at the same time, you know, you have to be careful that that doesn't get co-opted, and also there's a degree of conflict there, because when I've tried to raise this issue, like I said, I used to be a steward in Unison, and when I've talked to some other people there about this kind of thing, people are very opposed to that. They're not, there's no, within a certain sector of the traditional left, there's no interest in trying to change these things and try and maybe see that there could be a chance to do something slightly different here in this situation. It's like oppose or nothing, and I find that frustrating. I can totally understand the logic of that position, but I find it frustrating as well. So that wasn't very positive for me. It's just me grumbling.
I don't think it is grumbling. I think actually what we're grouping around is the fact that it's very, very reaffirming that local people do want to resist and want to carry out their own actions, and that's good, because that confirms all our world views that actually there are the seeds of struggle, and the struggle isn't dead. But I think the reality is that what we're all trying to group around, and the man here next to me put it very well, is the actual limits that we're hitting on them now. Actually, can't agree with the sister over there. I don't think we can be in and against the state, and I think there's all sorts of, and I know people honestly try and strive for that and look for ways in it, but I think one way or another we get trapped, or we get conned, or we get co-opted. I've seen that through various community development type activities over the years. I think it's very, very problematic, and I think somehow what we really have to work out is how we can actually build on the real struggles that take place towards keeping those seeds alive, keeping the ideas and the sparks alive. And that's the general, somebody used the term anti-capitalist, and I think Steve used anti-capitalist in a very specific way. I think we need to work out how those seeds and those sparks can be kept alive and can be generated into something which is actually beyond the system and against the system and for a replacement system.
Yeah, I think it is sort of like, you know, this divide, and I think that division is inevitable. I know that, you know, people don't want to be talk about division, and, you know, Margaret Thatcher was divisive and all the rest of it, but I think the reality is division. You know, on the one hand, we're going to have a growing number of people, I think, who recognise that the cuts and the system are one and the same thing. Fighting the cuts is fighting the system. Fighting the cuts is fighting capitalism. And on the other side, you're going to get people who are going to resist that message, and essentially, they are our enemy.
Yeah, so I'm, you know, like Margaret Thatcher, yes, I am a conviction politician.
On that note, I think we're scheduled to do it now for a
workshop. Yeah, that's right. So we do need to wind it up. We only have an hour for this.
Can I just say, long may we have bedrooms and enough food and adequate healthcare to have these discussions.
And on the subject of bedrooms, I was just asked if I could just flag up that there is a protest against bedroom tax next Saturday in Triple City Centre. That's Saturday the 18th. So thank you all for coming today.